Geek Actually is brought to you by listeners just like you. Thanks for your donations. If you want to get involved, send an email to feedback@geekactually.com or use the contact form on the website. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 30. Yes, we made it to episode 30.
Oh, my God, 30. This is 3030.
It's a 3030. My name is David McVeigh, and I am your head geek for the day, and I'm joined in studio here by my aspiring non-geeky kind of friend, Jacob Oberman.
Oh, I don't know about that. Not after The Watchmen, anyway.
Well, that's true. Now, just a reminder to that, there is two shows this week. Just a reminder that on the feed tomorrow, so you'll be getting this show Friday, Australia time, and on Saturday, Australia time, a second show will be going out, which is our Watchmen special that we promised 2 weeks ago that is being recorded tonight with Katrina Smith.
Stay tuned.
So have a look. You'll have two doses of Geek Actually this week. And just as a reminder, I actually did my Porn Plus Plus guest gig on Monday, so hopefully that'll be out on the feed too soon.
I look forward to that.
Oh, me too. That was a lot of fun, by the way, let me just tell you. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Explain to the listeners who is Porn Plus Plus.
Porn Plus Plus is a, and this isn't going to be to every listener's taste, I can assure you, but Porn Plus Plus is a podcast that is about pornography. So it's about, but not just pornography, about porn film. And so what Rich and Chris do every week is they do a feature review where they analyze a porn film from beginning to end. They talk about they profile a particular actress in the world of adult entertainment. They talk about their vault segment, which is their favorite moments in pornography. They do adult entertainment news. It's a very entertaining, fun podcast that I enjoy thoroughly and I listen to every week. It is not for the faint of heart because they do pull no punches, but it's also not what you think. It's not pornography.
No.
It is a news site, and it is very entertaining.
It is, in my opinion, a very funny show.
It's a very funny show, and I enjoy their banter a lot, and I look forward to hearing the show that I was on, hopefully. I feel like I've broken them, though. I really do.
I don't think you've got to give credit where credit's due. Look, they do... As I said before the show, they run at a particular rhythm that those two have. So that they're having a third on board. Look, maybe they'll have it as a special. I don't know.
To explain this, normally their show comes out Australia time, comes out about midday on Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. And it is now, we record this on a Thursday, it is now Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it still hasn't shown up on the feed. So either I've given them a massive editing headache, or, I'm not sure. I feel like I've broken Porn Plus Plus.
You broke them, Dave. You broke them.
I broke them. Okay.
You broke them in?
Well, sorry. Oh, that's terrible.
Excuse me.
Okay, now,
what
we didn't state at the head of the show is that this is Geek Actually 30. We said that, but it's for March 20th, 2009. And just a little bit of housekeeping, as always, at the beginning of a show. Mm-hmm. Once again, we do request any sort of sponsorship that you can give. It helps us keep this show on the air.
Please send in your donations.
As we said at the beginning, donations button can be found on the front page of geekactually.com. We also still request that you take the PodTrack survey, which is also on the front page of geekactually.com.
Even more important.
Very important, because we're trying to get statistics on PodTrack. And so they really need your surveys. It won't take you very long, and it would really benefit us. It's anonymous, so you can just go ahead and do that if you feel like it. Just a little bit of news, and I got to put this out, and there's actually going to be a special over the course of the next couple of months. There will be little audio excerpts put out onto this feed. This will be the first one. Basically, we are changing feed from Podbean to our own dedicated server. We actually have two websites going at the moment. One is geekactually.com, which is hosted by bluehost.com, who, and they're doing a stellar job, let me tell you. But we had a problem with them that they didn't have unlimited space or bandwidth, so we didn't want to host the podcast on there because you've got to future-proof these things. So we actually went out and we paid for a secondary host just to carry the podcast. Now, it's all fed into geekactually.com, but the podcast lives somewhere else, technically. Now... We're having an issue with Podbean because they don't really support some of the stuff that PodTrack wants to do. So I've been doing a little bit of investigation, and I found out that I can actually have our account converted on Bluehost to be an unlimited account with unlimited bandwidth and unlimited storage. And so we are moving the entire podcast back home, so to speak. Now, what this means is that the feed has to change because iTunes and everybody draw their feed from Podbean. So just to let you know, we're going to put this link up on the site as well, but you know, because there are people who listen to the podcast who don't go through iTunes. Now, let me just straight for the record. If you use iTunes Music Store as your source for podcasts, do nothing because we have already converted the feed. iTunes is already getting their feed through this new URL.
And they get the feed no matter what.
And they get the feed no matter what. So you do not have to do anything. This is for all the people out there who use other feed readers, people who are on Linux or choose not to use iTunes or what have you. The feed has changed for those subscribers. Now, what you need to do is go to http://... You need to change your feed, I should say, not go to. You need to change your feed to http://... feeds2feeds2.feedburner.com/geekactually. Now, this is a, what we've done is we've set up a FeedBurner account, and then we can actually modify our feeds behind the scenes anytime we want to without ever having this problem again. So FeedBurner is basically acting as our front door.
Right.
So if you go and update all your feeds to FeedBurner, you will have no problems getting this podcast now or into the future. You will have actually about 4 months to do this. Podbean isn't going anywhere until July. So we actually will be keeping this up. But just to, we will be putting out these announcements every show now probably because we need you to start changing your feeds over so that we will, so you don't miss an episode, basically. We don't want you to miss an episode. I do apologize for all this mess, but it is a necessity. We are slowly moving all of the episodes over to the Bluehost geekactually.com site. It is taking a while to do. Once they're all over there, all of the archives will start going directly from Bluehost, and the new shows, eventually everything will start going from Bluehost.
So, excuse me, this is so we are in line with PodTrack, is that right?
PodTrack, that's right. Correct, yeah. Also, look, financially, you know, as you know, we put out this podcast for free, and you know, we love doing it. That's why we do it. But the bottom line is, it does cost us money. We have to pay for hosting. We have to pay for our equipment and everything else. This is why we, you know, thank anybody who donates.
Absolutely.
Because we do actually have to pay to put this show on.
Correct.
And for us, financially, it makes more sense. Not only the PodTrack thing was just a catalyst, but it makes more sense that we don't pay for two separate hosting. Positions. If we can bring everything down to one hosting solution, that's going to save us a chunk of money, a chunk of cash. So, because we actually pay for our Podbean, it's not a free Podbean account. We pay a premium, so to make sure that everybody gets their podcast when they want to get it. So when Podbean comes up for renewal, which is in July, we aren't renewing Podbean. By then, we'll have everything moved over, and Podbean can just go away. We will just have
in the nicest possible way.
No, no. I respect Podbean, and I say they've served us very well, and we'll still have our podcast listed on Podbean, but it won't be hosting us. So there's the big difference is the hosting. Also, you'll notice over the next couple of months, there will be a change of design to the Geek Actually website. We are going to, I'm working on it now. I'm playing around with some new WordPress themes and so forth, and we're going to give it a facelift.
Nice. I figure we're about time, I think.
I figure we're about 6 or 7 months into this. I think it's about time we give it a bit of a facelift.
When did we start?
July.
Right.
So we're getting there.
Yeah.
All right. Now, in the meantime, can I just put out... a little bit of a public service information. If you go to geekactually.com or you try and get the podcast and feeds are down or the website is down because we might be in the middle of changing over something or whatever, follow me on Twitter. That's David McVay, MCVAY on Twitter, or you friend me on Facebook. All of my latest news is always on Twitter and Facebook. So if you follow me there, and if you go to geekactually.com and you find the site's down, you can go over to Twitter or Facebook, and you'll probably find the answer as to why. Okay? So those are like last resort places you can follow me on in case you need to find out some information, and that'll be for details on any case of downtime or anything like that. I have been told by Bluehost that to do the shift over to the unlimited scheme, we may actually be down for a couple of days while they shift all the files to a new server.
That's all right. That's so, okay. We can cope.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the point. If you find that it's down...
Speaking of Twitter, have you been made aware of the fake Stephen Conroy?
I was going to bring him up, actually. Good.
Oh, all right.
Good.
I won't. Because I thought it's a nice segue because it's a Telstra employee who created the...
Absolutely. Save that piece of news. I do
fake
have
a, Twitter profile.
I do have an article about him. We'll save that news because we actually have a lot on Stephen Conroy today.
All right. Yep.
Okay, we are going to just a quick word that today's show we started last week profiling composers. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're not going to have time to do that today.
We did say that we do that occasionally.
Yeah,
you know, once every couple of weeks.
We are going to do next week James Horner, and I've got a little piece of music we might play at the end of the show just as a little tease on him. The reason we're not doing a composer today, though, is because we actually have a lot of news about this Australian clean feed. And we were going to cover that in the tech section, and I think it's that's going to be opening up to a bit of a discussion. So I want to we'll save that for a little bit later in the show. But it's some news has reared its head on that. My goodness. All right. And we actually had a late-breaking story literally an hour before we started recording on this as well. So we'll bring all that up when we get down there. Okay?
Excellent. Who's the first cab off the rank?
Well, first of all, we got a little bit of feedback. Now I've lost my piece of feedback. Where's my letter? I have a letter here. Where is it? I had it sitting right on top of my paper here. What have I done with it?
If I had a hammer,
I'd
hammer in the evening.
Talk amongst yourself. For
I
a
must
moment.
Get. I've misplaced it. I had it for many years. Golden Throats 2, which had Leonard Nimoy singing.
I've been looking for
If I had a hammer and.
And Mr. Tambourine.
Oh, well, that's William Shatner off his album, the 1967 album, The Transformed Man, which I'd love to have a copy. Rhino Records actually re-released.
Oh, hang on, we have a visitor to the studio. we have a visitor. Yes,
Mirren,
what can I do for you?
Go ahead.
Are you filming?
We're live, dude.
Newsflash.
And are you actually recording?
Yes, we are. Yes, we have.
Oh, yes.
Oh, so, well, you're on top of things. I was just checking.
Thank you, Mother.
Okay, bye.
Thank you, Mirren. That was a little head pop in by Mirren.
The miracles.
Mirren's...
Am I moving to Melbourne?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Mirren's moving to Melbourne.
Yes. Mirren has been...
Mirren's moving to Melbourne. Sorry.
Mirren has been remarkably busy lately, so she hasn't been on the show, unfortunately. But Mirren has got some big plans at the moment. She's actually moving to Melbourne in a week and a half. So hopefully we'll be able to get her in.
Which is, in my opinion, the nicest city in the world.
And I love Melbourne. I do love Melbourne. I grew up in Melbourne,
so I
have no problem with that at all. Now, I'm going to do something radical here, and I don't expect any results from it, but I'm going to turn my Skype connection on.
Why is that?
Because just in case, this time of day, we can sometimes randomly pick up Sarah.
Oh, yes.
So,
Sarah, right.
I would love to try and get Sarah on the show again. So I'm going to turn on Skype, and I doubt we'll actually get anything. I've just turned the volume down for a second in your headphones because of that.
There it is.
All right, so we'll turn the sound back up. Now, that was the Skype sound that you heard. We're just going to put on our Skype connection in case something comes up.
Oh, look.
You never
know. There's David. I've got mine on, too. Let's have a look at the world clock here. Where is she at the moment?
She is in...
Vancouver?
No, she's in the States. She was on her way to L.A. or Arkansas. I can never remember. I can't keep up with that. She was in New York for a long time, but she's moving around.
Okay. About 8 o'clock last night.
Let's get on to our feedback.
Go, feedback.
Now, last week, we read a letter from Robert from Newcastle about pitching contests and coming up with script ideas.
Right.
Now, he's written us a very nice long email in follow-up to that. Now, I do apologize, Robert. I can't read your whole letter because it goes on forever and ever and ever. You got to keep your comments and emails short, unless they're directed at us and they're just something for us to read.
But succinct.
What I do want to read, he says at the beginning, he says, "Hi again, David." He says, "The on-air comments from Jacob were excellent. Many thanks. I was especially tickled by his comment, not to put you off. In L.A., there are 300,000 legitimate scripts floating around every month. It made me wonder what he would have offered if he did want to put me off." Laugh out loud.
I'm not trying to put you off. I'm just trying to put things into perspective and that you need to connect the dots, so to speak, and have the most powerful people with you that you can.
Now, he also goes on to say that he has checked out SPA, and the conference is in Sydney on November 9th.
Thanks for
the advice. And he also said it was also useful to hear your comment, David. Don't get too attached to your show ideas, coupled with Jacob's comment that he has written heaps of pitches and only one was accepted. Just by way of an update, I have some bad news and some good news. And he goes on, and he's got a few paragraphs on this, but basically his bad news is that he didn't make it into the finals on this pitch contest. But the good news is that an executive producer with 20 years of experience was rejected too. So
there you go.
So there you go. You never know. Now, he actually did go on at the very bottom of this, and the part that I really wanted to...
At the end of the day, you've got to be in it to win it, so to speak. So.
He says that I feel that today I am moving 1 meter closer to my Hollywood 2016 goal... laugh out loud, woohoo. Anyway, but the last paragraph is the one that got me, and it actually poses a question, and I thought we'd read this one out. It says, fun idea for your show. A friend of mine said, Robert, you're going to need a catchy name to break into the entertainment industry, and I replied that since I was from Newcastle, I was going to use the name Hunt R Valley. At that point, we both cracked up, but I thought you may want to explore whether people with manufactured, quote-unquote, names are more successful in Hollywood than people with their real names or just plain names. Cheers, Robert. Now, I've got something to say on that.
Ask any porn star.
Okay. The thing about manufactured names is...
Wait.
Forget your man out of the gutter. All right, so enough of the porn for a moment. In the real industry, in the sense of the mainstream industry, I should say, not real, that's a terrible thing to say. In the mainstream industry... Actors on the majority, and I'm not saying that there aren't people who just manufacture names for the sake of manufacturing names. I actually have a friend who has a manufactured name, which I think is ridiculous, and I'm not going to mention it because I don't want to offend anybody. But on the most part, in America, SAG, the Screen Actors Guild of America, actually has a rule, and that rule is no two actors who are currently registered and working with SAG can actually have the same name.
Right.
This is why actors often take on false names, like Michael Keaton. Now, I don't have their real names at my fingertips right now because I'm just reading this letter off, but Michael Keaton is not his real name. Michael J. Fox is not his real name. And that's because when they actually applied for their SAG memberships, there already was their real names in place.
Yeah.
And so they chose other names just to get onto SAG. So... we don't just manufacture names on the most part. There are people like Cedric the...
Mind you!
There are people like Cedric the Entertainer who created a nom de plume.
Yes, yes, yes. There are plenty of nom de plumes that occurred in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. A lot of actors of Jewish background, American actors like Gene Wilder, for example.
True.
Was Eugene Silverstein. Kirk Douglas was, the late Kirk Douglas now, was, in, ready for this, Isur Danilovich Dembski.
Martin Sheen was originally Estevez.
So, I mean, there were reasons. I mean, there are valid reasons that a lot of actors changed their names because their names were a mouthful. But in regards to Robert's question, he wants to know if he's going to further his career by a simple name change. I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. I think, you know what? I think the only time you really, realistically, that you would want to even consider creating yourself some sort of really funky stage name would really be if you're going to things like music. I mean, Will I Am and stuff like that. You know, these musicians come up with some J-Lo and, you know,
oh, fuck
Puff
off.
Diddy and
fuck
what have
off.
You. But
sorry.
Well, there's our explicit tag for the day. And, you know, you'll get us put on the ACMA blacklist with that behavior.
We'll all be on the ACMA blacklist before you know it.
More on that later.
Yeah.
But I think as far as acting is concerned, I don't think it's going to get you really any further than using any other name. So I would say... keep writing in, Robert. We love your feedback.
Yeah.
And I would say keep your name, okay? Your name is just fine. Now, we also have a feedback from Atomic Betty, our forever wonderful friend Atomic Betty. She's put a comment on the last episode that actually says, I love the features of the new iPod Shuffle, especially the controls on the headset. Now, this has been very controversial, and we'll come back to this. I use my iPod on my train commute. Trains too crowded to read papers nowadays, and I often bump the controls and restart a podcast. Oh, I'm already half an hour into. Grr! And it's cute. She thinks it's cute, the new iPod Shuffle. Now, the reason why this has been controversial, and we're going to start, I'm going to just do a little bit on this very quickly. We're coming back to tech. We've got film first. But on just to answer her question, the reason why it was controversial was because some industrious person actually cracked open the headset on the iPod Shuffle, the new iPod Shuffle.
The new one.
The
brand new one.
Yeah, with the new one, with the controls on the headset, and discovered that there was a chip in the headset. And they started to do a little bit of investigation, and it looked like that they had actually DRM'd or digital rights managed the headset, so you couldn't basically replace the headset. You could only use an Apple-branded headset.
Oh, this is what you were saying in the beginning. Yeah, yeah.
But it turns out that that's actually not true.
Not true?
No.
But hang on. Who said it? Apple said that?
No, Apple has now basically said that the chip in the headset is not DRM.
But did they say originally that it was?
No, they didn't. This was a speculation that came out. And all these rumors came kicking around. Anyway, Apple has basically said what the chip is there for is it basically certifies the headset for the made for iPod scheme. And the reason why that is important, I will tell you more about when we hit tech. Okay? It doesn't mean you can't use another headset. It just means you might not get some of the advanced features because it's not made directly for the iPod. And we'll come back to that when we hit tech. First, we're going to do film and television, though. And you know what? We got a busy, busy news day today, so we're just going to keep plowing through this stuff, okay? Because we actually have that... Oh, hello.
Hello.
What the hell is that?
What the hell's that?
I have.
What have you hit there? Oh, you've come up with that website. Oh, my God.
God, noisy. All right. That was actually some music from the film Easy Virtue, which is our feature review today. And we'll come back to that, too. All right. So, boy, that just kind of caught us off guard.
Sorry
there,
about that, kids. I hope you're awake now.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's a nice little piece of music, wasn't it? Okay, Linda Hamilton, film and television news. Linda Hamilton has confirmed that she is doing a cameo in the new Terminator film. There was all sorts of umming and ahhing and speculation as to whether she was doing this
Pish
or not.
Posh. Wait. I couldn't care if...
No. It's actually quite good. It's very clever what they've done. She's not actually appearing in the film. She is supplying the voiceover narration at the beginning of the film, ties it in to Terminator 2, which is a very nice touch, and I'm grateful that she is actually doing that.
And so, the Governator, what's happening with him?
No news on that one yet. So we'll wait on that one. John Favreau, who directed Iron Man and is currently directing Iron Man 2, he also directed Swingers and many other films, and he's an actor
Swingers.
As well.
1995.
Absolutely, good film. Now, he wants to direct, he came out publicly and said that he wants to direct The Avengers, which is the next big Marvel film, which is the one that they're all alluding to in all of the current... It's outside.
Okay.
We're hearing traffic noise in our headsets. He's alluded to the fact that he wants to direct The Avengers, but due to schedule conflicts, because Marvel's got so many films on the works right now, that he doesn't think he'll be able to, which is a real shame, because I think he is a great directorial choice for The Avengers. Speaking of Marvel news, we have some news on Thor. Thor, God of Thunder, which we announced a couple weeks ago that Kenneth Branagh is directing. First up, there have been discussions about the casting of Thor himself. No name has been given yet, but apparently people who have tested for the role, and out of these people, I don't know all of these people, but I'll give you the names and you can decide whether they're your favorites or not. Mm-hmm. Josh Hartnett, I do know.
Please.
Josh Hartnett was apparently tested for the role. I think he's all wrong.
Mm,
Charlie Hunnam, who is in Sons of Anarchy. Mm-hmm. Tim Hiddleston, who is in The Gathering Storm. Liam Hemsworth, who is in The Expendables, who is going to be in The Expendables. I should say. Joel Kinnaman and the previously rumored Alexander Skarsgård have all tested for it, but there's no casting news. What has been announced, though, the reason we bring this up, is that the big shocker is that Natalie Portman, Queen Amidala, for those Star Wars fans out there, or for people who are a little older.
Is that
like
a lawnmower I can hear?
I think it's a truck. Oh, no, it could be a lawnmower.
It's a lawnmower.
It's a lawnmower.
There you go. We're very provincial here, ladies and gentlemen. I do apologize.
I must say, though, that to be fair, there is a very good chance that the listeners can't even hear it.
No.
So
okay, keep going.
We're hearing it, but they may not even hear it. Right. If you do hear it in the background, that's a lawnmower next door. It's a very high-tech operation here. Okay, the big shocker is that Natalie Portman will be playing the female lead role.
Why is that a shocker?
Well, because Natalie Portman's kind of, after Star Wars, has been taking slightly more grown-up roles.
Yeah.
She's been doing things like Closer and stuff like that.
You think this is regressive?
Not necessarily. I just think it's an interesting choice for her. I think.
Do you have confidence in this film? Be honest. Come on.
Honestly, I'm not sure if it's actually one of Marvel's most cinematic ventures. I do have confidence that Kenneth Branagh can put together a decent film. Mm-hmm. And I do like the fact that I have been reading that he wants to base the entire thing in Asgard. So basically, it's going to be a big fantasy film. It's not necessarily a superhero in urban town, you know? So it's going to be Odin and Thor and Loki and, you know, it's the Battle of the Gods and all this sort of stuff. And that kind of intrigues me a little bit more than seeing Dr. Donald Blake strike his cane on the ground and become the God of Thunder and solve crime. Because Thor, as a superhero, was always a little bit dorky. Mm. I liked him as a mythological character, you know?
Yep.
Anyway, so that's Marvel news. Now, Michael Bay had some words to say about Paramount Pictures this week, which I thought was very intriguing. Apparently, Paramount contacted Michael Bay about Transformers 3. Now, Transformers 2 is about to come out this summer. Michael Bay directed the first two Transformers films for Paramount.
May I say, I balked at watching Transformers, and David showed it to me recently, and it's a great film.
We'll make a geek out of you yet.
No, you won't.
All right, so so Michael Bay has directed the...
In my cold, dead hand.
Michael Bay has directed the follow-up to Transformers 2, Revenge of the Fallen, and Paramount approached him and said, we want to talk to you about setting the release date for Part 3. Mm-hmm. And Michael Bay said to Paramount, apparently, in an article, on the phone, he basically said, yes, that's fine, but I need to take a year off from Mighty Robots. To pursue other things and blah, blah, blah. And then so he said, and they said, we'd like to set a July 1st release date. And he goes, yes, that'll be fine for 2012. So anyway, Paramount agreed to this. Everything was all hunky-dory. And then Paramount came out in a press release saying, Michael Bay will be directing Transformers 3, released 1st of July 2011. Apparently, Michael Bay came out in the public fairly scathingly and said, no, 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 no. I'm taking a year off, goddammit. So he's not going to... Michael Bay is the one director, I must say...
They try to force his hand.
One of the directors in Hollywood right now who you just can't bully.
You're right.
You really can't bully him. He is as stubborn as they come. So I think Paramount will be issuing a retraction on that one somehow. Now, I have an image, and I'm going to post this up on the website because I just love it. I'm going to show Jake the image right now. For those listening at home, you can't see it. But
I see it?
This was a piece of viral campaigning for the series True Blood, which Jake and I are big fans of, which is being released in New Zealand. And they've put out this. These are apparently all over the place in New Zealand. And I just love this. I'm going to show Jake the picture
True Blood's
now.
The beast. Some of them are broken off, too. Ladies and gentlemen, what clever marketing in New Zealand for True Blood. Yes, okay. So what you see are wooden signs that say, in case of vampire, with a silhouette of a...
Of instructions on how to use it.
Instructions, and below the sign, there are wooden stakes, which you can break off. That is very, very clever.
And in this picture, there are several of the wooden stakes already broken off, which we think is very funny.
Yep.
So it's a great piece of viral campaigning, and you know what? It's getting a lot more press in New Zealand than it ever got in its Australian release.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, great show.
Great show. Now, if you want to go before we get this show up or before we get these links onto the site, it's actually...
Time's running away, David.
I don't know. It's actually...
On your back.
You can actually see these pictures at a website called The Daily What.
The Daily What, as in W-H-A-T?
Yes.
Right.
The Daily What?
What?
All right. So, that moves...
Yo, film me.
Now, David Chase is back in the news again.
Oh, yes. This sounds great.
Sopranos creator David Chase has announced his return to HBO. This is from Slash Film, by the way, who also do the wonderful Slash Film cast. They have announced his return to HBO with a miniseries about the invention of cinema and subsequent growth of the Hollywood film industry. The series will be called A Ribbon of Dreams, and it will begin in 1913 and follows two men, a college-educated mechanic engineer and a cowboy with a violent past, who begin as employees of D.W. Griffith, and go on from there. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a miniseries. As I say, it's written by David Chase. And the title, A Ribbon of Dreams, is actually from a quote from Orson Welles, who actually once was quoted as saying, a film is a ribbon of dreams.
Lovely. What a lovely title.
It is. It's wonderful.
It's going to be juicy, David. I can feel it.
I
can feel it in my waters.
I need something from David Chase right now. Yep. I really do. All right, so that's that. Now, Sci-Fi Channel, category. Yeah. Sci-Fi Channel has decided that its name, its television network name, is just a little too generic.
Gone.
Sci-fi, it's a bit generic. Okay. So they've decided that they're going to rebrand themselves in America, and I'm assuming the rest of the world as well. Mm-hmm. And this is their new brand, and I'm going to show this to Jake. What they've done is they've kept, so it's the same pronunciation, so it's still the Sci-Fi Channel, but it's now, this is their new logo. It's actually spelled S-Y-F-Y.
Capital S, lowercase y, capital F... For fucking idiots. Lowercase y. Sci-fi.
It says NBC Universal has announced that after 16 years, they are renaming the Sci-Fi Channel to Sci-Fi. So technically, you read it out loud. This is what it actually says. It doesn't look like it when you look at it. But on the television screen, the logo is now very different.
I suppose it's a bit like something else. Hulu. Sci-fi, Hulu, I don't know.
Hulu's actually suffering a little bit because some content's being pulled from it.
What do you mean? Like what?
It looks like some of the major networks are starting to pull some of their content because now they're all back in bed with iTunes again.
Who's back in bed with iTunes?
Well, NBC and all the major studios.
Are they? They have been. But wouldn't Hulu have had contracts with?
Well, it's actually owned by NBC.
It is owned by NBC.
Yeah. NBC started it.
Oh, I see.
They started it to get their stuff off of iTunes, but now they're back on bed with iTunes. Oh. So it's all very confusing. But Hulu is still around. We don't get it in Australia, mind you.
Do you ever see that thing with Al Roker going off his? He's getting off his. I mean, he was going nuts.
About Al Roker Hulu, goes off his thing about every second week.
Like Roke's on coke.
Yeah. There's a wonderful quote from Roker where they were talking about they'd just gone to see a great comedy film. I can't remember what film it is they were talking about. And on air, he said, yeah, it was really funny. We've been doing lines all morning.
Yeah.
And everybody kind of looked at him. It's like, hello. Excuse me. Yeah. All right. We have two veils. We have two veils. First veil is our condolences go out to Liam Neeson, whose wife Natasha Richardson has now died. Yesterday, the news reports were very shaky. She was brain dead. She was okay. She was in intensive care. We don't know. Blah, blah, blah. Today, it came out she has died.
Very sad.
And it's very sad. Now, for those who don't know, Natasha Richardson is a member of the Redgrave family.
Her niece, isn't it?
I think it's her. It's Vanessa's niece, I think, anyway. Mm. But she was an actress in her own right, and she will be missed. And the other veil we have going out.
Before you go on, Dave, you know there's been a lot of high-profile people who have died in skiing accidents in recent times.
Yeah, apparently, not only that, though, she died in a skiing accident. She was learning to ski.
Yeah, I know.
So she wasn't even a long-term skier.
Sonny Bono hit a tree.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, full on. Yeah, he was mayor of what's the town in Colorado?
Boulder? No.
No.
Anyway, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yes. he hit a tree. Hit luck. Yeah.
Second veil we have is for actor Ron Silver.
Ron Silver, I know that name.
Yeah, Ron Silver has been in the industry for many years. Yeah. He was in Reversal of Fortune as the lawyer and so forth. He died at age of 62.
Hang on, that's too young. But wait a second here. Ron Silver, I know that name. But besides Reversal of Fortune...
TV shows as Veronica's Closet, Chicago Hope, Wise Guy, TV movie Life Pod. He was he won a Tony for Speed the Plow on
Speed
stage. Where are we?
There's something missing.
He was in the Catherine Bigelow film Blue Steel.
Had his own radio show by the looks of things here.
He's been around for a long time. Now, Mirren actually met Ron Silver. She passed this story on to me because she actually brought me the story until Ron Silver died. And she said, you know what? He was a pig. She hated him. She was a waitress at a restaurant where he was actually doing stuff. I think it was comedy, actually, at the time, back in the
70s. In the general direction?
No, she just hated his smugness and his arrogance. She said that she was in this. She was cleaning up at the end of a night. He came down and she said, Mr. Silver, I think you were wonderful. And he goes, I know. Anyway, that doesn't take away from the fact that it is sad that anybody passing.
Rhoda, Rhoda. Okay, I see. Early, this is what I'm thinking. I'm looking back early in the piece.
Ron Silver's been around for a long time, and he has passed away at the age of 62.
Yep.
So, veil to Ron Silver. He died peacefully in his sleep with his family around him early Sunday morning. This was reported on March 15th. Mm. He had esophageal cancer. Okay.
Yeah, he was in the West Wing as well.
Now, I just got to pass on one little last piece of... actually, I've got two. Sorry, I forgot about the late breaking story.
You've got to keep moving, Dave.
Yeah, I got to keep moving. SAG and AFTRA are combining forces, and they may be pushing their members to strike yet again.
For what?
Apparently, they're still in talks with the advertising industry, and they're not happy with the way that things are going. Mm. If you want to read this full article, because it's quite a long article, you can find it at Variety.com.
Variety.com.
It's written by Dave McNary, and it says, SAG is rattling its strike saber again, this time in conjunction with AFTRA. Last time, they didn't have the support of AFTRA, so now they're kind of joining forces. It says, as talks with the advertising industry for new commercial contracts drag into a third week. God, last thing Hollywood needs right now is another goddamn strike.
I believe, Mirren might be able to back us up on this. I've heard that fees for actors for commercials in Australia have dropped.
Oh, Australia is dreadful.
Dramatically.
Australia is dreadful. You used to be able to make a good living out of commercials in this country, and you can't anymore. Yep. Okay, now, this is the last one. This is the last piece of film news. It kind of leads us into tech, I guess, because it's online. But this was late breaking. I got this article literally just before we went to air, and it just made me laugh because I know you're into meditation, Jake. And David Lynch.
A specific meditation. Buddhist meditation, as Buddha taught it.
Yes. I'm aware of that, but I thought you might be curious to check out David Lynch's new site. Mm. David Lynch has something called David Lynch Foundation TV. And in it, he's inviting people, it's a bit of a beta program, 500 invites have gone out, to do transcendental meditation with him on the web.
Oh, that's TM, yeah. Okay, that was the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who you might remember from that 20 years ago today Beatles special.
Yes. According to the article on TechCrunch, it says, filmmaker David Lynch is weird.
Yep.
But you already knew that.
Yep.
It is what makes him a great filmmaker. I've always been a big fan, but I'm not so sure about his new website, David Lynch Foundation TV. The foundation is dedicated to providing students with the opportunity to learn how to meditate. Apparently, Lynch is really into transcendental meditation. The new video site shows Lynch talking about the benefits of transcendental meditation and what it is. It will also showcase documentary footage from Foundation events and benefit concerts. Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, Sheryl Crow, and Eddie Vedder are going are giving one to Radio City Music Hall on April 4th. The site promises to deliver a daily dose of David Lynch. He talks about movies as well as meditation and free concert footage. I would share a video here, but they are not embeddable. I told you he was weird. All right.
So it's he's not weird for you know.
So it's DLTV. Yes. You can go there if you want to and check out the Transcendental Meditation, David Lynch style.
Unfortunately, I mean, Transcendental Meditation has its benefits, but it's a very surface level based meditation. Anyway, right along.
Moving right along. We're moving into tech. Now, I feel like there was something I just missed. Oh, no, that's fine. Okay. Go away. Okay. Oh, no, wait a minute. That can go away too. Okay, tech. All right. We have two major pieces of information to give you in the tech field this week. A couple of little things around that. So we'll go through the little ones first. First of all, another Seattle newspaper, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, which has chronicled the news of the city since logs slid down its steep streets to the harbor and miners caroused in its bars before heading north to Alaska's goldfields, will end its print run on Tuesday. It is going fully digital, web only. This is actually the second major newspaper in America to do this, and the writing is on the wall that most of the major newspapers are probably ceasing their print runs and going web only. I think we are seeing the death of the paper newspaper.
Won't happen for a long time.
You know what? I would predict...
Won't happen for a long time, David. We are an aging population. There are a great deal of people out there who go nowhere near a computer.
Ah, but you won't have to. That's the issue. Now, what has happened in America in particular is that most people are digging up their newspapers via A, their computers, or B, their mobile devices. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that is really revolutionizing the whole newspaper and magazine industry is the Kindle reader, which is Amazon's reader.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this uses what's called digital ink paper, which means it's not backlit. It is white paper, black writing. And it's fully integrated, silent wireless, straight to Kindle servers. And you can put a subscription in for, as an example, Leo Laporte talks about the fact that he gets the New York Times.
Yep.
3 o'clock in the morning, every morning, the New York Times, in its complete edition, is delivered to his Kindle without him having to think about it. He wakes up in the morning, he reads his newspaper right on his Kindle device, takes it with him. Kindle's got something like 30 hours or 40 hours of battery.
Yep.
It's pocket size, you know, but with a big enough screen that you can read.
Yep, for what you're talking about, I don't think we're going to see for another 15 or 20 years. Like, on masse, I don't think so.
Do you know what I say? I say...
People got to start popping off.
I say the majority of print newspapers will be online only 5 years from now.
I say 10.
You say 10? Yeah. All right, bets are in, people. You've heard it here.
10 years. Okay? 2019.
This is a really fluff piece, but it's just highlighted where our world is going today. Apparently, there is a group of people, now I'm not even sure how you get involved in this, but apparently a text message arrives with an address code, and a request to be prompt. And basically, this is now what's called underground dining, Sydney style. And you basically get involved in this. You'll receive a text message saying, be here at this time, and this is the dress code, and you just turn up, and you don't know who you're going to have dinner with.
Right.
So this is the future of...
Blind dating?
Not even dating. It's just social gatherings and dinner parties.
I see your danger in it.
Yeah, do you know what? This reminds
me... I see a great danger. Call me a skeptic. Look, I've just finished reading the graphic novel Watchmen. call me a skeptic.
Now, I saw a movie starring Hugh Jackman a few weeks ago called Deception, which was exactly the same concept, but it was for meeting for sex. You would just literally call and say, this hotel, this time, and people would meet. Well, it looks like life imitating art to me. Anyway, citymorningherald.com.au has that whole story if you want to read it. Now, Jacob's article.
Telstra man. Oh, Telstra man behind fake Stephen Conroy.
All right, now we're going to go into a little bit about Stephen Conroy in just a minute. I'm going to put this article in Jake's hands because he's going to bring that part up, but not yet.
Fine.
Not yet. I just wanted to bring this up very quickly because Jacob and I mentioned the FOI, or Freedom of Information Act, the other week when we first started talking about the clean feed. And when we talked about the ACMA blacklist, Jake said, but you should be able to get it through the Freedom of Information Act. And we said, of course you should, but you're not allowed to because the government has all control. Well, apparently, the tenders for Australia's broadband scheme, you know, this rollout of the nationwide broadcast, all of the tenders for that, people who are trying to get that, are also protected from freedom of information.
Funny about that.
So nobody is allowed to actually know the details of any of the tenders.
Fascinating.
I'm sorry, we are closing this country off more and more and more, and it's getting freaky. Apple, in one of the most bizarre twists of legality I've ever seen, has decided that they want a company that releases an iPod stand called the Podium.
P-O-D-I-U-M. Spelt as the Latin English spelling?
Absolutely. But they've decided that they want the company to cease and desist the selling of this because it contains the word pod in its name. What the hell's that all about?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Unreal.
Push. You know what? Apple, that's ridiculous. All right?
Yeah.
We don't have time for that today. I'll move that aside.
Keep going.
Just a very quick follow-up to all of our nonsense that we rattled on about Sol Trujillo. And we basically said that it was disgraceful how much money he walked away with. And we said that it shouldn't be allowed. Well, according to the federal government, they're trying to pass laws now where they're saying it won't be allowed in the future. Apparently, Rudd is taking action, and he's passing out a bill that will actually clamp down on golden handshakes. Now, this won't be retroactive. Anybody who is already in one of these wonderful agreements where they walk away with $1 billion won't be affected by this, but it will affect future.
It contracts. Won't affect them because they can fight it in a court of law because it's contractual.
And there is that, too. All right, so that's all of that. Now, before we get on to the really serious side of things, Apple made an announcement yesterday, Tuesday, American time, Tuesday our time, well, Wednesday our time. iPhone 3 software will be coming out soon, and they made a special announcement, and they had a presentation, and I just wanted to run through some of these new features because I'm really jazzed about this, and I think we are seeing the hints of something much bigger on the horizon, which Jake is going to be very interested in. Now, first of all, what they made the announcement about was in summer of this year, that's the American summer, so it's about June, July. Excuse me. June would make sense considering that the iPhone's release was in June and the iPhone 3G was in June, so June will probably be when it comes out. They'll probably also, they didn't make any announcements about this, but there'll probably be some sort of third version of the phone coming out as well. But in the meantime, all they've really talked about is the software. The third generation of operating system, or iPhone 3.0, and its SDK, Software Development Kit, are being announced, and people can start taking advantage of the Software Development Kit to develop new software for the new operating system so that in June it all rolls out beautifully. Some of the new features that are in this new software are phenomenal, such as the SDK now allows for in-app purchases. What this means is that you don't have to keep going back and, you know, getting updates and what have you from the App Store. If you're playing, the example they showed was they were playing a game of Sims, The Sims 3 on the phone, and you go over and you say, oh, I actually want something else, you can literally tap on the screen, bring up the interface that says I want to buy an expansion pack, and purchase it straight out of the game while you're actually playing. You couldn't do that sort of interaction before. So in-app purchases are really kind of neat. But that's not the big news. Peer-to-peer connectivity for apps over Bluetooth is a much bigger piece of news, which means that you can now do things like play interactive or games where you can play against another player.
Cool.
Two iPhones together, cool. Connect via Bluetooth, and you can actually have cooperative play or
so
what have you.
Can you do that now? No.
No. And one of the things they demoed was a game called Live Fire, which is actually a first-person shooter written for the iPhone, and they demoed it with two guys actually playing cooperatively in this game, and a third player coming in via the network, and it looked awesome.
So what is it? What is it?
Livefire is a first-person shooter, like Quake or Doom or what
oh,
have you.
Oh, right.
And they,
like,
were playing,
yeah.
And they were playing cooperative
Castle
play.
Wolfenstein, yeah.
Yeah, well, a little bit more modern than Castle Wolfenstein. Anyway, so that was really neat. Now, back to that headset issue that Atomic Betty brought up. The made-for-iPod accessories are brought to a whole new level with the iPhone. Now, this is probably one of the most amazing things, and this is why I think that the iPhone is going to become the device of choice for a lot of people going forward.
Yeah.
Because the dock connector has now been made available to app writers, which before it was not, which means you can now write apps that actually address the dock connector. Now, where this came into effect is they started saying, well, what sort of uses would you have for that? Well, let's see. One demonstration they had was a blood pressure cuff that had the squeeze ball in the cuff and a dock connector coming out that you plug into the iPhone.
Get out of here.
Pump the thing and
get
it your blood pressure.
Get out of here.
Absolutely. Another thing was...
Do you know what you could do? You could also have a jigger that tests blood for people who suffer from diabetes.
It's funny you mentioned that. They actually did a demonstration where they said you have the blood scanner, which plugs into the iPhone.
Yeah.
The diabetes person smears their blood on the scanner. The scanner reads it, sends the information to the iPhone. The iPhone not only tells you your insulin levels, it then measures out how much insulin you should take. It takes into account the exercise that you've done.
You could do an ECG, because you could do a home ECG.
You could do anything. And this is the thing, having that connectability to the doc,
to send to doctors,
to that made for iPod doc is phenomenal. I think we are going to see this thing start turning up everywhere. Could you imagine a mechanic would be able to plug the iPhone into some sort of diagnostic tool for a car and be able to get all the readings for the car, motor, and everything right in the palm of their hands.
Yeah.
You know? So we're starting to see all sorts of wonderful new ideas.
They need to work out the battery. They need to work out the battery.
Here's where I thought it might interest you, Jacob. If we have access to that dock and we have the new 3.0 operating system, which now supports cut and paste, finally. So they're introducing cut and paste, and it works beautifully.
Yeah.
And there's that rumor of those 10-inch screens being ordered from Asia.
Is it going to happen?
Well, my thinking is a tablet PC with a touchscreen interface, a 10-inch touchscreen interface, would suddenly become a really viable tool, because you could use it for diagnostic tools, you could plug things into the dock, because you wouldn't run Mac OS X on it. You would run iPhone.
iPhone.
Which is version of Mac OS X, but you'd run the iPhone operating system on it, and it would be full touchscreen, and you could basically do anything with this thing. I think the tablet PC is getting more and more likely later this year.
Copyright David McVeigh.
I'm not the first person who said this, but I think...
That's a fantastic idea.
I think the talk...
Apple, if you're listening, do it, I'll buy it.
I think the talk of that dock now being accessible just changed the game. And that means that I think...
Well, I can get a 3G card for this. So I'm pointing towards my Asus EPC. I can get a 3G card for this.
But think about it. There's no reason why the tablet PC wouldn't have 3G, Bluetooth, wireless, everything built into it, just like an iPhone does.
Camera pointing to the front?
Well, because no, you wouldn't use it. Oh, yeah, it would have a camera pointing to the front so that you could use it
Skype.
There's all... I mean, the world is our oyster. We wait and see. Mm. I'm putting in a prediction that a tablet will be here in the third quarter. Okay? That's my prediction.
Third quarter, okay. Of this year.
The other thing that they have now made accessible, which they absolutely adamantly said you couldn't do, but they have now decided to release it, is the APIs for turn-by-turn GPS. So they're not actually offering turn-by-turn, because they said they don't have the licenses on the Google Maps to offer that, but they're now saying to anybody who wants to write a turn-by-turn GPS navigation system for the iPod, feel free.
Yeah, right.
Go for it. So the iPod in the second half of this year will also become your turn-by-turn GPS in-car navigation. All you need to do is plug it into an in-car charger and off you go. So that's big news as well. Push notification for apps. This was fabulous. Push notification was something they actually advertised last year and never delivered, because they couldn't make it work. Now they have rebuilt their infrastructure, and apparently they have made it work. What this means is, rather than running background application, because background applications slow the phone down and chew the battery up, they've put a push application, which means that, let's say you're using something like a messenger service, and the first idea with a messenger service is it runs as a background app, so that it's always there to receive your messages. Well, they said they don't want to do that, because that sucks your battery away. Okay, what they have offered is this push service. What this means is, you turn on the messenger service, you type in your message, send. Whoa, hello, sorry about that, guys. I hit the mic. Usage, send. You then can go about your business, do whatever else you want. If a message or a reply comes to your messenger service, it pops up on the icon saying message received. So even though your phone was, the application wasn't on, it's still receiving information for that application.
Wow.
This is a very, very neat service that will actually go across the board for all apps. Anybody who needs to use that push notification can.
It's always updated.
Always updated. So that's really good.
Incredible.
Other goodies for the app developers were the Shake API has been given more free will, so they can actually use that Shake, the idea of being able to shake your iPhone and make it do things. Mm-hmm. Streaming video and
that's
audio.
That's the accelerometer, isn't it?
Yeah, he's using the accelerometer. Mm-hmm. Streaming video and audio will be enhanced. That means that it'll do things like one example was with ESPN. They said that it will automatically detect what your connection speed is and send the appropriate size video to you.
That is clever. That's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Absolutely. In-game voice will be enabled so that people who are playing things like first-person shooter Livewire can talk to the other person while they're actually playing the game.
No way.
So they're going to have in-game voice. The proximity sensor. Now, on an iPhone, when you have a call, as soon as you put it to your face to answer the call, the screen goes black.
Yep.
It's got this little proximity sensor in it.
Yep.
That proximity sensor was off-limits to developers.
Oh, yes.
It's now being made available. To
okay, and to do what?
I'm not sure, but they're making it available. Uh-huh. Now, in-app email. Because they don't have background applications, really what used to happen was if you wanted to send something via email, it would close the application, move you over to the mail app. You do that, then you had to restart the application again. But now all apps have the ability to be able to send and receive email straight out of the app. So if you've got something that says, now send us an email, it's not going to take you to the mail app. It'll allow you to send mail straight out of the app. And all programs and APIs will now have access to the iPod library, which is really, really valuable, which means that while games are playing, you can actually choose to run your own music and stuff onto the other applications.
Cute.
So they'll have access to that. I've written here in big exclamation points, copy and motherfucking paste has been added to the thing. After 2 years...
What was the issue, Dave? Why did they not have this to begin with?
Nobody really knows.
It's
apparently,
so strange.
It just wasn't, high on their priority list. It just wasn't
copyrighted.
No.
Issue? Just, I mean, it's part of Apple as
they
well.
They had all sorts of other things that they were working on, copy and paste. Copy and paste was demoed in this announcement, and it works really well. And it's across all applications.
Oh, God.
So you can actually copy and paste between applications.
Universal. Beautiful.
And on the copy and paste feature, they've added a new shake function, which is if you copy something and paste it and you make a mistake, you can shake to undo.
Brilliant. That's like, whatchamacallit?
Yeah, Etch-a-Sketch.
Etch-a-Sketch, yeah.
Yeah, so you can just shake to undo it.
Very clever.
They've added, finally, landscape in mail.
Actually, they got an Etch-a-Sketch app.
They do, I've got it, actually. Yeah. They actually have a... they've added landscape in mail, which is a... Thank God they finally added this. For those who don't use an iPod, it has a little on-screen keyboard, which is kind of neat, but... When you're typing on it, the keys can be a little bit small, a little bit too close together. When you're on Safari, you can actually turn the iPod sideways, put it into landscape mode, and you get a bigger keyboard.
Beautiful.
Mail never had that. Mail was only in portrait mode. They've now made it so that mail can also rotate and you can get the full-size keyboard in mail, which is nice. They have added MMS. MMS was a feature that was, for some reason, missing off their texting. You can now put inline pictures. Well, you will be. I say now. This is all in June, people. Mm. This is not out yet. You will be able to put inline video and pictures into your SMS messages. And they've put across the iPod search. They've added Spotlight, which is the search feature in macOS. They've added it to the iPhone. So if you're looking for something, you literally just swipe to the left off the main home screen, and it takes you into a general search, type in your search, and it actually goes through all apps, mail, everything on the phone to find something.
Fantastic.
So they've added search to it. They've also added autofill and phishing, anti-phishing to the Safari browser built into it. And they've added the Shake to Shuffle feature, which is in the new iPod Shuffles. It's got a US summer release, and I am jazzed about it. Some of these features are...
How long do you think it'll take to get here?
Oh, we'll get it at the same time. We got
oh, really?
iPhone 2 at the same time.
Cool. Next.
Okay,
running out of time, Dave.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Let's have a look here. Text dating, fake story. Okay, tell me about fake Stephen Conroy.
There's a couple of things. Let me bring this article up too at the same time. A web prankster impersonating Communications Minister Stephen Conroy on Twitter has been outed as a Telstra staff member. The staff has now been silenced by the telecommunications giant, perhaps out of fear that the revelations will further increase tensions between Telstra and the government, which has excluded Telstra from the bidding process to build a $10 billion-plus national broadband network. The satirical fake Stephen Conroy profile, which has now been wiped, sparked almost as much discussion online as Senator Conroy himself. It primarily lampoons the government's proposed mandatory internet filtering scheme. Following an online manhunt that turned up a long list of suspects, fake Stephen Conroy decided to turn himself in before he could be outed. Quote, OK, so here it is, fake Stephen Conroy equals the person mentioned. And, so we've got something else from the Sydney Morning Herald today, which says Telstra's attempts to cover up the fact that it tried to silence fake Stephen Conroy have backfired spectacularly. A Telstra employee who created a satirical Twitter profile has told his bosses not to throw me under the fucking bus just to make Telstra look social media savvy, unquote. You like that? After it revealed that the popular Twitter profile impersonating Communications Minister Stephen Conroy was written by a senior Telstra employee, and I won't mention his name, the postings stopped.
Excuse me for a second. You're reading an article from the paper, right?
Yes, I am.
Do they mention his name?
They do.
Mention his name?
Yeah.
It's public record.
Yeah. Telstra Social, I'm just trying to protect him, I suppose. Telstra Social Media Advisor Mick Hickenbotham came out to declare that Telstra did not try to shut the person down, nor tell him to cease making the fake Stephen Conroy posts.
Well, all right. Why we bring this up? For two reasons. One is it makes the news, and it highlights the fact that we have no Bill of Rights or freedom of speech. Because let me just point out that there was a guy in America, and I think he's still running around today, calling himself fake Steve Jobs. Mm. And basically he goes out and he puts stuff on Twitter and on his own website and stuff, basically putting out all these fake Apple rumors and stuff because he's fake Steve Jobs, right?
Fake Steve Jobs was ranked 37th on the Business 2.0's 50 Who Matter Now feature.
Well, there you go. And the point is that, you know what? Satire is not a criminal offence, people.
Absolutely,
you know?
Not.
And the fact that this guy wants to go out and say that he's fake Steve Conroy and say things, as long as he's not being, as long as he's not defaming Steve Conroy, if he's satirizing, that's a big difference. Now, in America, they have a Bill of Rights and freedom of speech to protect them. Here, we don't. And, I mean, the fact that he is fired or shut down or his accounts are removed.
If we did, this minister would not exist. He wouldn't be doing what he is doing.
Now, we are also, the second reason why we bring this story up is because
we have no constitution.
We have a constitution. We just don't have a very good one. What we don't have is a Bill of Rights. Bill of Rights and constitution are two separate pieces of paper, and the Bill of Rights is vitally important. Anyway, ABC Radio National has a show called Background Briefing, and we've been reporting since we started. We've been reporting about internet censorship. We've been reporting about censorship in general, about how closed-minded Australia can be about these things. And the biggest thing that's raised its head over the last 6 months has been, of course, this internet clean feed. I use quote-unquote, because the bottom line is it's not going to clean anything. So many experts are now coming out and basically saying that this is an unworkable scheme. Most of the senators are now against it. Experts have basically come out and said they have no interest in this. 90% of the Australian population in a current survey basically said they are against it. Yet Stephen Conroy, our esteemed communications minister, Senator Stephen Conroy, I should say, is persisting. He is still moving ahead. And in fact, according to this ABC Radio National broadcast, which we are going to play you some clips from here in a second, I encourage you all to go and listen to the whole show. It is available on iTunes or at the ABC website. We will put the link directly to
Absolutely.
It from
well,
our show notes.
Not only is it well worth listening to, you'll start to realize that, first of all, the Liberal Party, which isn't Liberal at all, ladies and gentlemen, it is our Republican Party, or ultra-conservative party, who was originally in power, has a long association with the Christian fundamentalist right in this country, much like it does in the United States with the Republicans. So the Labor Party, when it won the last election, also tried to procure Christian votes, as it were, and indeed our Prime Minister really is quietly, although he hasn't really said much on the matter, funny about that, is backing Stephen Conroy, who is the telecommunications minister, on this silly You know,
unworkable
censorship of the internet within Australia, so purely on the basis of keeping the Christian right voting for the Labor Party. That's all it's about.
Let me play you a little bit of the introduction from the ABC. This is
am I correct?
You are, absolutely. This is taken from Background Briefing. So have a listen to this. Let me just turn our headphone volume down before we start.
In the name of protecting children, the government plans to build a machine which will make us the first Western democracy to censor the internet. Communications Minister, Senator Stephen Conroy.
Well, Australian families deserve a government that's prepared to put in place policies that will protect its children from such vile websites as child pornography and the ultra-violent sites. And Labor makes no apology whatsoever for introducing a mandatory ISP filtering scheme which will block these sites from families' lounge rooms and children's bedrooms. We are unapologetic. We campaigned on this policy in the lead-up to the last election and we will be introducing mandatory ISP filtering.
Okay. Mandatory ISP-level filtering means that your internet service provider, maybe you're using Optus or Telstra's Big Pond, would be told to filter anything the government decided. But the fact is, police, lawyers, civil libertarians, IT specialists and some child welfare advocates say this filter won't stop child pornography on the internet.
Okay, so first thing I have to say there is that they didn't campaign on this. the Labor Party says that they campaigned on this and that this is why they've got the right to go ahead and do this. They mentioned it once in a church rally. That is not called campaigning for a particular thing. Most people were unaware that this was actually one of their platforms because, do you know what? Not all of us listen to church meetings. I mean, that's the bottom line, you know? All right, so first of all,
the government should be in fear of its people, not the other way around.
Absolutely.
And when he makes that veiled statement of, you know, what did he say? You know, we're unapologetic. You know, that's a veiled statement of, we don't give a shit what you think. We are not listening to you. We are doing our own thing.
Wait till the next election,
that,
pal.
Yeah, that is not a government. Absolutely. Government must listen to its people.
Actually, I take that back. That is not a democracy. A democracy requires that they work for us. They are our representatives. So if 90% of the population of this country is in disagreement with this policy, you don't go ahead with that policy. That is ridiculous. That is John Howard-type mentality. John Howard was our previous prime minister, and he would do the same sort of bully tactics where he would just push through no matter what. He didn't care what anybody would say about what he had to do. He just kept moving through. Well, Kevin Rudd, I like you. I liked you a lot, and I got to tell you, at this point, you're on shaky ground with me. Now, the scary thing about this entire thing is it's all going to be based on this ACMA blacklist. Now, this blacklist that they talk about is 1,300 sites that are reported to them, and they are considered to contain illegal or objectionable material set by a set of standards which we are not allowed to know about. And once they are banned, there is no recourse. There is no independent review committee to then bring something out if it is wrong. They are completely under their own set of guidelines and rules, and they are not governed by the Freedom of Information Act. We are not allowed to see this list or anybody's names who are on this list. Now, the problem I have with Senator Conroy is that he refuses to explain anything. So,
when you are elected, you are accountable.
Absolutely.
When we ask you to explain something, as your constituents, as your population, you must explain.
Absolutely. Now, here is a little bit of Stephen Conroy. Same is still from Background Briefing from the ABC. All four clips that I have here for today are from that show. This is Senator Conroy in the Senate being asked a question, and have a listen to how Senator Conroy likes to answer questions.
But by late last year, and with so little detail forthcoming from the minister, the Greens took up the issue in Senate estimates. Senator Scott Ludlam wanted to pin Senator Conroy down on some key points that were causing mass confusion. Was the filter compulsory for everyone, or could people opt out? And what kind of material was going to be blocked? Senator Conroy began by saying that the Australian filter proposal was not unprecedented. It was also happening in Europe.
Just to indicate countries that have implemented along the lines that Abel's talking about include Sweden, UK, Canada and New Zealand. This is not some one-off excursion.
I understand.
They have different parameters.
Of course.
And we haven't set any parameters at this stage. We are going through that process.
Of those countries that you've named, you're not expecting that they're all identical in form. Are they... Because I understand that your proposal is not opt-in or opt-out. It'll be mandatory content blocking across, you know, all Australian ISPs.
Well, we're...
The countries that you've just listed for me, is it mandatory or is it an opt-in system that, for example, concerned parents could take advantage of?
Illegal material is illegal material. Child pornography is child pornography. I trust you're not suggesting that people should have access to child pornography.
No, no, that's why I was interested in asking about the law enforcement side of it
We're working both angles at it. We're just trying to use technology to enforce the existing laws.
I'm just wondering if I can put these questions to you without being accused of being pro-child pornography. I mean, that would
I could get the question without being accused of being the Great Wall of China.
Well, that's...
Oh, OK.
I haven't...
As long as you're allowed to have value in your questions, I'll have no value in my answers.
What Senator Conroy didn't say was that the ISP filters in Denmark, Sweden, Italy, Ireland, Norway, Belgium, Germany and the UK only block child pornography, nothing else, and they do it voluntarily.
Okay. So the man...
Now you can see what we're up against.
The man has no dick. I mean, it's as simple as that. All right. Okay, how do I word this without offending people? I don't want to offend listeners of our show who might feel that that there might be some value in this, because I spoke to somebody the other day who is a good friend of mine, and when I said that I was very angry at the Rudd government because of all of this, she said, no, Rudd's doing a wonderful job, and he's better than Howard. And I said, fine, but at the same time, this internet filter scares me, and I have a real problem with it. And she goes, we have to stop the child pornographers. And I said, but that's not the problem. The problem here is if you just wanted to block sites that were known child pornography sites, that would be one thing. The problem is there aren't very many
these
child
are technically inept people. And this is the thing. Stephen Conroy is not explaining himself. He's not explaining how the internet... he has not mentioned the fact that there are no child pornography websites out there, quote unquote. I mean, they're not. They are doing this via torrents. They are hiding behind legitimate websites, if only for a moment. I mean, you should play that clip from that the Australian Federal Police officer.
I don't have that one lined up.
Oh,
but
what a shame! Because what they do, ladies and gentlemen, is they actually hide behind. This is according to the Australian Federal Police. They hide behind legitimate websites. They'll send an email to each other to say, look, it's on this website now under this particular keyword, which has nothing to do with child porn whatsoever. They download the porn and it's gone. It's gone from that. There are no child porn websites, as far as I'm aware,
that
are left. It's impossible to track.
Right.
This is about censorship, true censorship, according to the government, censoring whatever it bloody well likes.
I wouldn't say...
It finds, quote-unquote, disagreeable.
Disagreeable. All right, I'm going to go so far as to say that I'm not going to absolutely 100% say there are no child pornography websites, because you know what? There might be. Who knows?
They're shut down in seconds.
There aren't very many, put it that way, because child pornographers do not sit on what is known as the public World Wide Web.
No.
They sit in, as you said, torrents, or encrypted news groups, or in chat servers. They go peer-to-peer file serving. These people hide in the shadows. And this government has already confessed.
And they're very clever. So,
and
you know,
the government has already confessed that this filter does not work at that level. This filter doesn't block peer-to-peer or news groups or any of these other services. It only monitors the World Wide Web. It is going to block fuck all.
Yep.
In the way of child pornography. What they are going to block are the objectionable sites. Now, what is very interesting is that this morning, an article came out in the Sydney Morning Herald.
Brace yourself.
Brace yourself for this one. An article came out in the Sydney Morning Herald. Somebody has leaked the ACMA blacklist.
That's the Australian Communication Media Authority.
This is this super top secret document that contains the 1,300 sites that they say are the child pornography sites, the banned material, blah, blah, blah. There is so much damage control going on at the moment, it is insane. Somebody actually posted up the links to this site, and it's already down. The company that actually posted the links has been put onto the blacklist just because they dared to actually do something. It is insane. If you actually post hyperlinks to any of the sites on this list, you can be facing $11,000 worth of on-the-spot fines. I'm sorry, this thing has just blown up. It has just exploded, and let me tell you, if this isn't jumped on, if people don't immediately start looking at this and saying, because according to this article, it was only something like 30% of this list actually was child pornography. The rest of the list were things like anti-abortion, anti-gay.
A Queensland dentist.
A Queensland dentist.
A tour operator and their operator website.
It's just bizarre, the stuff that is actually on this list. It is nuts. And on top of this list, in an article about 4 or 5 months ago, Stephen Conroy said they wanted to test this filter by adding another 10,000 sites on top of the 1,300 list. This 10,000 sites would contain what they consider, and I put air quotes into the air, unwanted material.
Yeah. According to whom?
According to who? Exactly. So I would say go to the Sydney Morning Herald and look up Leaked Australian Blacklist, and you can actually read that article for yourself. Now, one of our shining white knights of this whole thing has come from a very unlikely source, and that is Senator Xenophon.
Oh, yes. Now, Senator Nick Xenophon.
Nick Xenophon. Now, Senator Xenophon was actually for the filter. He actually wanted it to help ban gambling sites, which are illegal in Australia already. They were made illegal several years ago.
There's one, I think. No,
offshore
they're
only. There's
right.
No official.
Not within Australia. Is that
not
right?
Within Australia. There are, all gambling sites are illegal in Australia. They were made illegal under the Howard government when this whole ACMA thing fucking got set up. Okay. Now, this is Xenophon. Xenophon, interestingly enough, changed his mind. And this is a little quote from Xenophon. This is also from that Radio National report. So have a listen to Nick Xenophon.
Well, it concerns me that any government, and I'm not saying necessarily this government, could certainly change the goalposts in years to come. And I think there are some very significant concerns about that in terms of censorship, in terms of there being a political flavour to anything, to the filter being abused.
Okay, so that was Nick Xenophon. And as you can say, he's come to this rational understanding that anything could go on to this list. There's no governing on it in a sense. There's no checks and balances. You could basically call up and say, I want this site put on a list because it offends my personal beliefs, and bang, it's on. That's scary.
Yep.
That is just terrifying. And I want to make this very clear. The point that I was making about this friend who said that she wanted to stop the child pornographers, one of the arguments that has come up, and you heard Conroy himself try this, one of the arguments says, if you are against the filter, then you support child pornography. That is not the case.
Absolutely
not. I do not support child pornography. Nope. I support freedom of speech.
Absolutely.
I support freedom of choice. And I believe that, yes, by all means, arrest and charge all the people who are doing that illegal activity.
Of course.
But do not punish those who are not.
Absolutely not. It is time, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Australian voters to ask for a referendum on First Amendment rights in this country.
Absolutely.
We don't have them. We don't have them in this country. We need the freedom of... We need in our law, in our constitution, to say we have freedom of speech.
And we have one last clip from this, and then I do encourage you to go and listen to the entire thing. It's an hour long, and it is fascinating. There's some really interesting stuff. This last clip, though, really highlights how this filter can affect you. This is a senator, and he was actually affected by a censorship filter. Now, have a listen to this.
While the rest of us wait to see if compulsory internet censorship becomes a reality, senators are already engaged in their own live censorship trials with the Senate filter. Last year, one of the Senate committees decided that if federal public servants had to have their computers filtered to stop them looking at undesirable content, then the senators should also live under the same set of rules. It was an impressive gesture of egalitarianism. Trouble is, the Senate committee forgot to tell the rest of the senators that their computers in the parliament were now being filtered. So when Liberal Senator Corey Bernardi got a Google News alert telling him that he'd appeared on the website of the Australian Protectionist Party, he thought he'd take a look and see what they were saying about him.
I was prohibited from accessing a couple of sites which were content related to me, whether they were pleasant sites or unpleasant sites.
This was to do with your stand on opposing gay marriage and abortion and things like that.
Yeah, and so there were sites out there that were supportive, broadly supportive of my position, and there were sites that were broadly condemning of my position. But I'm interested in what people say about me, and I'm interested in their arguments, and that's how we inform ourselves as politicians. But I was prevented from accessing these sites, and one of them because, you know, it contained sexual content. It was a gay newspaper online. It's not my habit to normally frequent it, but if they're writing about me, I'm interested in the story. The other one was a political website with a political party of which I don't share their views, but they wrote about what I wanted there too. Now, that brought home to me there are two websites that I'm not able to visit because someone else has deemed them inappropriate.
Because somebody else deemed them inappropriate.
Yep.
And that really is what it comes down to, isn't it? It really comes down to who makes the decision, who decides what we can and we cannot see. We are adults. We're free-thinking adults in a supposed free society. Why can't we see or read what we want to see as long as we're not breaking the law?
Yep.
You know? And the point is, he made there, is that the two sites that he went to try and see, one was a gay site, so we're punishing them for being gay, and the other site was an opposing political view. Well, that scares me. Right there, that scares me. So we get to a position where we're in a George Orwell future where not necessarily this government, but some government down the track says, oh, you know what, I think we should put the opposition's website onto the blacklist so there's no opposition. You know? I mean, we get to that point. You may think I am stressing the point too hard. You can't. Every little chink in the armor of freedom is one step closer to being not free.
Yep.
So we have to make that stand when we can.
David, I reckon our time's almost up.
I think it is. I actually have or had a film to review, but I think we might save that. Actually, I'll just give a quick encapsulated review because otherwise it's going to be out of date.
Go ahead.
I won't play the trailer or anything, though. So,
well, you had a bit of it before anyway.
Sorry? Yeah, you heard a little bit of the music before.
Inadvertently, yeah.
The film I actually went to see was Easy Virtue.
Easy Virtue.
Easy Virtue, which is based on the Noel Coward play and was shot previously in 1928 by Alfred Hitchcock, believe it or not.
Was it?
As a silent movie. Can you imagine Noel Coward as a silent movie? No, exactly. This film is directed by Stephen Elliott. Now, Stephen Elliott has made three previous films, and let me encapsulate those three previous films in a nutshell. Number one, never got it, never understood what the big fuss was about. Number two, hated it, was an absolute piece of crap. And number three, was completely incomprehensible.
Right. First one was Priscilla, wasn't it?
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Right. Second film was Welcome to Whoop Whoop. Third film was Eye of the Beholder.
Right.
So you can imagine... Oh, we did.
Yes, we did.
That's Mirren coming into the studio again.
We've made our two veils for today. The other was Ron Silver.
I know, and I met Ron Silver. He was a pig to me, and you're not allowed to speak ill of the dead.
We told them that already.
But I just want to say that you should be careful how you treat people, because they always remember. So there you go. and also, people can take guesses on who the third one.
That's true. Yeah, Mirren has a theory. We've actually mentioned this on the show before.
She's had this theory for more than 30 years.
We have this theory that...
And it tends to be right, unfortunately.
Famous people die in threes, yeah. And it's kind of morbid, but famous people tend to always die in threes.
But in their area.
In their area. So we've actually now had two actors die. Mm. So we're waiting for a third. Now, this makes me very nervous considering that Robin Williams just had heart surgery.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, no, Patrick Swayze.
Oh, Patrick Swayze.
Oh, no. He hasn't gone yet. Fair go.
He's been saying all his goodbye. Oh, or Farrah Fawcett.
What?
Farrah Fawcett's got anal cancer. She's going in for...
What?
She's been sick for years. Oh, keep up. Keep up.
I'm going to Wiki right now. Excuse me?
I'm going to go now, and I'll see you.
Okay, see
we'll
you later,
see you
Mirren.
We'll see you at the movies.
That was a short commercial break from Mirren Lee.
God.
All right, back to Easy Virtue for a second. So Stephen Elliott surprised the hell out of me. I got to tell you, I approached this film like homework. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to see it. I kept thinking, oh my God, he's back. Now, Stephen Elliott has had quite a long break from filmmaking because apparently he had a skiing accident, and considering that Natasha Richardson just died, you can tell how serious these things can be.
Yeah.
And he spent several months in hospital. He has come out of it, you know, a new man, basically. And he said in an interview I saw recently that it made him rediscover his sense of humor. And this is very evident in Easy Virtue. It is a light, fun, frivolous film about manners, basically. The plot revolves around a son, a very proper English boy, returning to his very proper English family after some time away, and he brings his new wife, who is an American race car driver, and she basically makes waves in this very British estate household. And it goes on from there. The film co-stars Kirsten Scott Thomas, who I've always thought was a bit of a cold fish as an actress, and in this film she still is, but it suits the character magnificently. Colin Firth...
Sushi, that's what my wife used to call me. Cold fish.
Blade Runner reference, thank you.
Sorry.
It co-stars Colin Firth as the father of the household, who is completely browbeaten to the point where he very rarely speaks, but when he does, he says some very funny things indeed. And the two leads, of course, the son who returns home is Ben Barnes, who played Prince Caspian in the last Narnia film, and he does a good job. But the real standout performance in this whole thing is Jessica Biel, and I never thought I would actually say that, because Jessica Biel, I've never thought of much of as an actress, but she is charming as the American race car driver woman who really kind of rocks the house. And she's very good. It's all set period.
Does it remind you of The Cat's Meow? You remember that...
It does a little bit, and it also reminds me a little bit of Robert Altman's comedy of manners, the, oh God, my mind's gone blank. The one he made just before he died about the murder mystery in the house.
Gosford Park.
Thank you, Gosford Park.
Gosford Park.
Thank you. Oh my God, my mind went blank. Gosford Park. Thank you very much. Gosford Park. It reminds me a lot of that. It's a lot of fun. Sorry, I'm just being handed notes on the desk. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Sorry, not relevant to the show. Oh, it reminds me of any of those.
Come on, Dave, we're running out of time.
Any of those British comedies of the Ealing Studio days. In fact, this is produced by the Ealing Studio, so it should give you an idea
that
right there.
That Ealing feeling.
It is a lot of fun. It's not a perfect film, but it is well worth a watch, and I was very surprised, and I will be looking forward to Stephen Elliott's next film now, because he redeemed himself in my eyes. Okay, we do have to wrap this up because we have to start preparing for our second show for the night, which, of course, is going to be this Watchmen special, which we're going to bring up.
This is going to be a beauty. Katrina's back on.
Katrina is coming tonight, and we are also hoping to get a mystery Skype call. Hopefully, we'll get that in. I'm not going to make any announcements until we actually do the show, because we don't know if we're going to get her or not. Hopefully, we will be a panel of four. If not, we will be a panel of three. In the background, you can hear a piece of music coming up. That piece of music is James Horner's theme to Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. The reason we play this is because next week we are going to do a profile of James Horner, and this is a little bit of a teaser for you guys. So until next week, I would like to thank you for joining us, and I'd like to thank you, Jacob, for joining us.
Live long and prosper.
And go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And here's a little bit of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan to take us out.
Goodbye. See you tonight, Dave.
See you tonight, Jake.
Oh, don't turn it off. Oh, you gotta fade it out. I know.